Well, this is Jerry Cannon Smith. Innovative Health Strategies, I guess is who you work for. And if you want to say, take time and say a few more minutes, take a minute to tell people more about yourself, go ahead and do that.
Okay. Well, good morning. I'm Jerry Cannon Smith, public health pediatrician and public health faculty at Jackson State University School of Health Sciences. And my topic is placing a stethoscope on the heart of the community, integrating community consumer dialogue into the development of an obesity prevention continuing medical education toolkit. Short version, getting the community perspective on what we need to do in the clinic, basically. So I'm really delighted that you're here today. I get a chance to talk about two of my favorite topics, prevention and children. So many times in the clinics, when we encounter non-adherence or non-compliance, our feeling is that we're really just not connecting, we're not motivating clients appropriately, and of course that has an effect on their health outcomes. And so many times we say, oh, I just talk until I'm blue in the face, and still nothing changes. My response is, maybe we need to change colors. Maybe we need to, talk until we're purple, or just kind of change the paradigm and look at it through the lens of the consumer, the community, the client, and integrate that into what we do a little bit better. So this is a small project, but I think it illustrates that point. I have no disclosures. So I wanted to look briefly at the scope of the project and tell you why it's so relevant to me, look at prevention in context, and then tell you a little bit about our findings in terms of the focus group themes, how we integrated into the format, and what we see as the implications, and then maybe get some feedback from you. And so before we look at the statistics, I just wanted to remind you that behind every statistic is a person who has a myriad of influences, and these influences, of course, affect their health status as well as their health behavior. We know that obesity is a global problem. It's a global problem for children all around the world. The numbers are just astronomical. It's a national problem here in the United States, and we've seen a lot of initiatives recently dealing with obesity in children. It's a problem for men and for women, and disproportionately affects women. It's a problem for, we see disparities, of course, in racial and ethnic groups. When we look at the prevalence of child and adolescent obesity, of course, we know that we've had a tripling or quadrupling over the last few decades. We look at the trends here among the adults, and we look at Mississippi, and we unfortunately have had the distinction for the past 6 years of being the fattest state in the nation. When we look at Mississippi students and we look at the rates for overweight, unfortunately our overweight students are less prevalent than the obese students. So, we're tending not only to have larger groups of overweight. We have 43% of children who are overweight and obese, but the bulk of them are obese. And even though we're starting to see plateauing out in the upper grades, we're still seeing great disparities, particularly among the African-American female students. We are not in the top five for preschool obesity, but we do have some counties in the state that are comparable to those areas. It's very important to me as a pediatrician because the complications affect almost everybody's system. And it used to be that it put them at risk for these complications later, but now we're seeing significant morbidity for children now. We're seeing children having to have orthopedic surgery because of their weight. We're seeing so many children with metabolic disease, an increase, of course, in diabetes type 2. And, of course, we're seeing so many intergenerational issues as well. Since we know that the etiologies of obesity have to do with the interaction between genetics, environment, and behavior, then we need to really look at those influences. So when we look at the influences and we look at the individual, the family, community, culture, society, and global, I'd like to just kind of drill down just a little bit to that central portion. So if you look at the central portion in terms of the family and community, and you look at a child's weight status, it's not just the child's individual characteristics, but you also see it's related to the parenting styles, the parenting preferences, even the parents' health status, mental health status. You also see that it's related to the community environment, it's related to the policies, zoning policies, accessibility of convenience foods and restaurants. It's related to school policy in terms of the lunch programs. So it's a community issue. So what did the community have to say about it? We had four focus groups, each of 8 to 10 participants each. There were urban and rural groups. The parent groups were parents of preschoolers. We also had a parent group of older children. Children 8 to 18, or actually 8 to 17. We had young adults, that was 18 to 24, which was a mixed group. These were actually Job Corps students from a diverse group by race, gender, race, ethnicity, gender, and geography. So they were from all over the United States. So what did we find with the, well, what we asked was what they felt was the optimal provider-client interaction, and then what was the least favorable, so that we could look at some of the barriers. We also asked the impression of motivational interviewing and their preferences for educational materials. So when asked what approach would be most effective in discussing weight issues, the responses were centered around respect, professionalism, sensitivity, concern, honesty, a positive attitude, and relation building. Simplifying medical terms, including BMI and BMI percentile, was a theme of both parent groups and the children's group. The children in general wanted to know what steps to take as related to their issues of concern. For example, the athletes wanted to know specific weight about optimal weight and optimal diet. The parents likewise wanted more specific information and wanted to know what's going on with my child and wanted the provider to, quote, tell me what I can do to help my child, end of quote. The young adult group stressed the importance of customizing the approach because they felt that not one size fits all. Recognizing that relationship building is often a prerequisite for this approach. A positive attitude and perception of respect was especially important in the areas of physician shortage in the rural areas. When queried about the least effective approaches to obesity prevention counseling, negativity was the major theme in all groups. This negativity was characterized as either a negative attitude, allowing the use of stigmatizing language such as statements, you're fat or you eat too much, or a perceived just didn't care, didn't want to be bothered attitude. The preferred terms were overweight and obese. One parent qualified overweight with the addition of overweight and at risk for obesity to allow for a discussion of the risk factors that were associated with obesity. Some parents felt that the negativity came across in the form of perceived parental concern or unconcern, that the providers were making assumptions about them. And one parent said, I wouldn't like it if the doctor came at me as if I should have known that my child was overweight, or to take it for granted that I should have known or I should have done something different. Some parents reported that they would be less likely to take advice from a provider who was overweight or obese themselves. An example of statements used in motivational interviewing was given to the groups for their responses. This format generally received a positive response or positive reception, with the caveat that some clients might find it intimidating who were unfamiliar with decision making. They also felt that success would depend not only on the state of readiness of the client, but also on whether or not rapport had been developed with the client. It was most popular with the young adult group because they felt that it provided hope and provided motivation to really get them going. They also felt that it provided allowed the provider and the client to gauge progress. We asked them to do some role playing, and they were exceptionally gifted in that area, and even talked about a couple of the students talked about, with two guys, we're even going to go out and weight train together, you know. And then the other guy in the audience said, look, you know, you're a doctor. You got to set boundaries, you know. This is going a little bit too far. The two young ladies talked about, you know, how are you going to track me? How are you going to follow this? And the other one said, well, you know, I have this wonderful little motivational interviewing tool that I'm going to track. I'm going to put in a notebook, and I'm going to follow you, you know, every time you come in. And I was saying, yes, you know, that's just perfect. So we also, the parents really liked the idea of the incremental steps because they said that small accomplishments help you tackle greater goals. They felt that the motivation interview style was empowering, fostered accountability, and eliminated barriers by offering alternate solutions. The parents further discussed the importance of using motivational interviewing to develop customized, feasible individual plans of actions. The parents also highlighted the importance of including the child, especially older children, they said around 9 to 10 years of age, in the development of the plan so that there's buy-in from the child and a reason for him or her to take responsibility for their health. And to their inclusion, they felt, would not only reinforce parental goals, but prevent the child from feeling invisible. The consensus among the children was that they would like to partner with their doctor and to decide together what to do about their health. The issue that we didn't anticipate was the issue of mixed messages, and that was broached by both the children's group and one of the parents' groups. The athletes in particular cited mixed messages as one reason for decreased frequency of annual visits and health maintenance exams. It was explained by them that despite the gaps in coaches' explanation for recommendations, the coaches' recommendations would be followed because those differences really had not been reconciled at the health maintenance visit. One of the parents discussed getting different messages from the nutritionist versus a primary care provider and emphasized the need for sharing with parents how they came up with these conclusions or these recommendations, particularly related to BMI calculations, et cetera. Additionally, the athletes in the group felt that their typical sports physical did not allow adequate time to get questions answered because they felt that they would like to ask if I was healthy and if I wasn't, did I need to lose weight or what I need to do to get healthy, what should I eat, or what kind of exercise should I do. In terms of materials, both parents and children preferred materials that were easily readable, easily understood, with practical recommendations, not just what not to do, but also what to do in ways that they could understand and ways that could fit into their lifestyle. The young adults gravitated toward the Eat This and Not That series because they felt that it gave them some other alternatives. And they also, surprisingly, were interested in healthier cookbooks, which surprised me, and food and exercise journals. The older children and young adults liked the graphic representations of the consequences of obesity. You know, just show me the pictures. So the themes that were derived from the groups indicated the importance of respect, rapport, joint decision-making, a practical, customized recommendations in establishing a therapeutic alliance. So how do we integrate it? Well, when we look at the media choice model, it tells us that people really prefer media, naturally, that meets that gratifies their needs and or their preferences. So we looked at some of the national data regarded to CMA survey data, the ARC CME report of 2007, and then we conducted two local interviews. So we had 99 physicians that we queried about their needs, and we also queried and did a couple of informal focus groups with the Mississippi chapter of the Academy of Pediatrics. So nationally, people ranked qualities by relevance, convenience, quality. They preferred meetings, conferences, print media, e-learning, and so the trends, of course, were toward multimedia and increased e-learning. This was reflected or mirrored in our survey that was done by the Central Mississippi AHEC, and the print media was most preferred in addition to internet case study. The number one, of course, was actually coming to conferences like this, but barring that, the print, CD, internet, case studies, and kind of video conferences came next. The topics that were most important were management, prevention in the community, and cultural competency were the areas that were ranked highest. We asked the pediatricians, and they talked a lot about individual responsibility. So in some of the projects, what we've done is just kind of flip the script and say, well, if you're, you know, if you really feel so strongly about individual responsibility, consider your individual responsibility as patient advocates. We thought they talked about the differences between the who should take responsibility, public health versus university, and also what their preferences were. So the thematic convergence supports the current trends that we see in evidence-based practice for lifestyle, behavioral change, and practice settings, which includes motivational interviewing and the intercepts with the concepts of evidence, I mean, of client-centered communication, of course, and cultural competency. So how do we integrate that into the structure? But first of all, we decided on a multimedia CD or web-based program, which met with their preferences. We had print guidelines with the algorithm. We had a tutorial with the panel to coincide with their need or their preference for the kind of webinar-based programs. We had a mini vignette. We had discussions of practical applications by local physicians and annotated bibliography and a resource list. Excuse me, in terms of the content, we used the American Academy of Pediatrics evidence-based guidelines for the prevention, management, and treatment of obesity. And of course, the guidelines for counseling also include recommendations for motivational interviewing. We also included the ecological approach. I showed you one slide from the BR Voice that actually takes you through a scenario with a 12-year-old that's being evaluated, and to look at her history in terms of all of those influences, you know, in her life. You know, what does she do when she gets home from school in terms of her exercise, her study habits, and in terms of whether or not she stops at that local store on the corner, and you know, what she eats at home. What are the parents' recommendation? What are the parents' habits in terms of television watching? So we also looked at the focus group, well, the focus group reports, which I shared with you. Practical applications for diverse populations. We had a panel discussion that was included. We have a motivational interview tutorial, which has a PowerPoint. It also has a little mini vignette, and it also has a panel discussion attached. And then we have another video, a speaker, our advocacy chair of the Academy of Pediatrics, really talks about advocacy in and outside of the office, in addition to Dr. Aaron Shirley, who's kind of an icon in our area, and he gives some personal views on advocacy. So these are the topics, and we're in our final editing of the videos. And hopefully we'll be done by the end of the year. So what do we feel in terms of implications then? One of the implications I thought about was the new medicine. And in terms of the new medicine, Robert Veach, who's the author of Patient Heal Thyself, has said that the new medicine exists in a world in which the doctor's expertise in medical science will have to be combined with the expertise of others, especially the expertise of the patient in knowing the values upon which literally every decision in medicine must be based. And we're starting, I think, to make slowly some of those transitions, because in Healthy People 2020, we have objectives that center directly on the patient-provider relationship and on patient satisfaction with the patient-provider relationship, rather than looking just in terms of quality issues. We have objectives related, of course, to cultural competency, and not only for the umbrella of health equity, but also health literacy. In terms of evidence-based practices, we're moving toward, you know, comprehensive medical home, patient-centering, client-centered care, communication, and of course, shared decision-making. And in maternal and child health, we're putting greater emphasis on the life course approach, helping people to understand that what happens pre-birth, preconception, during prenatal period, during each successive period has an effect on the outcome, you know, in later years. So what I gather from the focus groups was similar to what Terry McMillan, one of her characters, said: can nothing make your life work if you ain't the architect? So thank you.